Tom Moran is the Senior Director of Media and Entertainment Marketing for Savvis Communications, a CenturyLink company. Tom studied at the University of Minnesota, and then in the early 90s began his career as a freelance photojournalist, fine artist, and musician, based mostly in London, England, and working with creative organizations and artists from many different cultural backgrounds. Returning to his native Minneapolis in 1996, Tom combined his creative pursuits with an interest in the technologies that were just beginning to transform the media production and distribution process. As an arts-minded technologist, Tom has pioneered a number of areas of media production, management, and distribution in the Minneapolis creative community. And later, working for the technology startup WAMNet, which was acquired by Savvis in 2003. For the past 15 years, Tom has played a leading role in developing solutions for creating, digitizing, managing, and distributing media for individual artists, arts institutions, and businesses, both large and small. Most notably, he has worked with many of the major music companies and film industry service providers in developing their digital supply chain capabilities. Please welcome Tom Moran to Cloud Computing West. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. So I hadn't even heard that biography in a really long time. It sounds really long-winded and probably makes me sound a little bit smarter than I actually am. So I'm going to start off with a little bit of a history lesson. As was mentioned, I'm not a technology person, but I do work in the telecommunications business. And this is a guy who I think is probably one of the most underappreciated people in the world of technology and telecommunications. And his name is Tibor Puskas, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. My Hungarian is not that great. But does anybody know what this guy did? Nobody ever knows what this guy did. This guy invented the telephone exchange, as opposed to inventing the telephone. So if you had a telephone prior to the invention of the telephone exchange, you basically had a couple of tin cans and a wire. And the only person you could call would be your mother-in-law or your business or whoever, because you literally had point-to-point connections, and that's what there was. So to me, this guy's way more important than the guy who invented the telephone, because 100 years before the telephone, there was the, you know, what they called the lover's telephone, right? The two tin cans and a wire, right? That's the easy part. The difficult part is figuring out how to get everybody to be able to call whoever they want. So Mr. Puskas, I think, was a really sharp guy. And that's my lead in to where I think we're at in terms of cloud computing. And I'm going to start with storage, but I'm kind of going to weave a story that touches both on storage, on networking, and on compute resources, because really the three things are very much interrelated. So to me, one of the things that's interesting about technology is that there's all these laws and rules, and it's kind of like, you know, evolution, and we're trying to predict things like Moore's law predicts, you know, the cost of storage going down, or the cost of Metcalfe's laws, the cost of networking going down. But like evolution, they don't actually work in a direct line. They work in fits and starts. And storage is a really good example of that, because cloud storage, for example, if you go and look on, you know, Savvis, my company's website, or Amazon, or any number of other people, they'll sell you storage for, you know, fractions of a cent per gigabyte, in some cases, at certain volumes. But if you walk into, you know, Best Buy and buy a hard drive, or you buy a hard drive in your new computer, you're going to pay roughly 10 cents a gigabyte for the storage on that device. And if you buy a mobile device, an iPhone or a tablet or whatever, and you upgrade it from its standard 16 gigs of storage to 32 or 64, you're going to pay $2 to $3 a gigabyte based on the cost of upgrading that device. So the cost of storage is not uniform. It's all about location. It's like the real estate business, right? Storage that you have locally is super valuable. And as a result, it's very expensive. And on the device that I have, like my phone or my iPad or whatever, for the media business in particular, this is super important because it's driving a fundamental shift in behavior. People are renting rather than buying. And one of the primary reasons they're renting rather than buying is not because it's cheaper, it's because it's more convenient, and not having enough local storage is one of the main reasons it's more convenient. So I can't carry my entire library of movies on my iPad. I could if I would. Now I have to figure out and decide what I'm going to watch before I leave and download it and get it on the device if I'm not going to have connectivity. because GoGo isn't happy for me to stream on the plane and I can't watch a movie. I can't, certainly can't walk into virtually any free Wi-Fi location and stream a movie at this point because their bandwidth is so limited, right? My 4G LTE device has a bandwidth capacity that's probably 300 times greater than what I get if I walk into a facility that has Wi-Fi that they're giving me for free. Because typically that facility has a 1.5 megabit T1 connection that's shared among me and all other 50 people in that facility, where my device in my hand, just straight out of the box without any upgrades, has 100 times that capacity in terms of speed. So it's a challenge to figure out how the media industry is going to make this big shift when there's some fundamental barriers related to the costs of not only storage, but also bandwidth. And this is where I think it gets really interesting. So my company, CenturyLink, if you guys have heard or seen the ads, is now selling home internet bandwidth at roughly $19.95 a month if you buy other stuff. And that's not my part of it, but I think you have to buy some cable TV or some home telephone landline, which everybody wants. In Canada, Rogers Telecommunications and a number of other providers sell home internet, and their cheapest package, which is metered, by the way, and I'll touch on this a little bit more, is roughly 50 cents a gigabyte, meaning that if I make a commitment for 500 gigabytes of data over the course of a given month, I get it for about $250. Now, this is significant because in the U.S., we're having this big discussion around net neutrality and all these other things like that, which isn't, even the guy who said net neutrality admits that's not what it's about at all. But what we're really talking about is metering. And we grew up in an industry, in the U.S. in particular, buying internet in a way that wasn't metered. But we're quite happy for every other utility that we buy to be metered. And somehow people think that the internet's never going to be metered. You know, we think that there's this like infinite amount of bandwidth, or there's some great business model where somebody could sell me a utility and not have to meter it and I can just use as much as I want. Well, electricity doesn't work that way. You know, nothing else works that way. In the long term, internet bandwidth will not work that way. We'll all be metered. So if I buy mobile data right now, my package for my iPad is, I think, $50 a month for 5 gigs. So I'm paying $5 a gigabyte. Now, it's very, very fast. It's super convenient. It works everywhere. But it's very, very expensive. So again, it's another big barrier to me. And I watched a movie on that with my daughter when I was on the road once. And literally a couple hours after I watched it, because it was near the end of my month, I got a notice from Verizon said I had gone over my limit. That movie was probably a 2 gig file. So I used up, you know, whatever, 20, 30, 40% of my capacity in 2 hours. And that's a monthly plan. So what about the cost of computing? We're here to talk about cloud computing, and I'm in discussions with media companies all the time where cloud computing is largely being driven by economics. And so the theory goes that cloud computing is cheaper, when in fact cloud computing is the most expensive way to buy computing that there is on a per CPU cycle basis, right? Meaning that what I'm paying for is not raw capacity. What I'm paying for is convenience. I'm paying for the ability to turn it off, turn it back on. That's what makes it compelling, not its price on a per unit basis. So think about how other utilities work. You know, power is based on demand. Certain Southern California power is a lot more expensive than power in other parts of the country, right? Right now we have this ubiquitous resource, but over time, the costs of computing are going to be very different depending on who you are, where you are, what you're doing, what kind of computing you're buying. We're in the sort of pre-exchange era of cloud computing, in my mind, if you will, meaning just like Mr. Puskas, right, pre-telephone exchange, there weren't any standards. There wasn't anything that would allow you to build a real business around the telephone. Well, right now, without interoperability across cloud services, I think we're in that same era, right, where there's really not a lot that you can do to truly transform a business, in particular media and entertainment. Now, there's things that developers can do. If I'm in the software business, absolutely, cloud transforms my world. It changes everything. If I'm in the application business, it changes my world. But most other businesses haven't really been transformed and won't be transformed by cloud until it becomes ubiquitous, standardized, and truly a game changer in terms of economics for everybody. So the second most expensive way to buy computing is colocation. meaning that I buy the hardware and I put it in somebody else's data center for the sake of convenience. And the cheapest way to buy computing right now, for most of the people that we talk to, is dedicated managed hosting, meaning that I pay people who can do it on a greater scale than I can, and this is the business that my company's in, right? And I get them to manage most of my IT resources, but not necessarily all of them. So when you talk to big companies about how they use things like cloud storage and cloud computing, what they do is they have a core set of needs that are met by managed hosting, and in some cases, co-location. If it's a legacy system that's so old that me or some other service provider can't figure out how to manage it for them, they'll manage it themselves, and they'll forklift their hardware into our data center, and I'll make the power cheaper, and I'll make the cooling cheaper, but I can't necessarily make managing the application any cheaper. If it's a standardized system, I can manage the database, I can do other things like that, I can take costs out of that based solely on scale. And then finally, there are certain things that we can do to burst them into the cloud. And they may use Amazon's cloud, they may use Savvis's cloud, they may use Verizon Terramark's cloud. That's the part of it where they don't really have to buy it from me to get the benefits of it, even though they're in my data center with their managed services. In the same way that if we're managing services on their customer prem for them, if I can do it more cost effectively by managing hardware on somebody else's premise, great. If I can't, then the customer will do that themselves. So what does all this mean? So for consumers, if they have cheap, abundant bandwidth, then cloud makes sense for them. And what I mean by that is iTunes now has this thing called iTunes Match. And so they will store all of my music, regardless of how I purchased it, in the cloud for me. And music is low enough in terms of the bandwidth need that I can listen to it pretty much wherever, and it's not going to kill my plan on my phone. And so that's great, because I essentially have this dream of, you know, every track I own or every track I've ever purchased is up in the cloud, and I can get it pretty much anywhere. But with movies, it's a completely different story. And there's really no cost-effective way to do that for video, frankly. So most of the video that you see now that's online that's consumed is YouTube. The percentage, I think this was last year's statistic, but the percentage of video content that was paid for, consumed in the feature film business was less than 1%, or less than 1.5%. That's just a couple years ago. So there's a long way to go in terms of the rest of the media industry coming along to moving significant volumes of content through the cloud, or storing stuff in the cloud. Right? If I'm on a mobile device, both the storage and the bandwidth are very expensive, and that's my disincentive to consume that way, to consume on that device. And that, you know, we're in a world of early adopters. We live among ourselves, right? All these people who have all these gadgets, and we do all these other things. And so our perception of what everybody else does is severely skewed, or at least mine is, right? Even my kids do a ton of consumption. But if you look at the general populace and you look at the numbers, the number of people who are consuming things like movies through download services, you know, the percentage of feature films that are being purchased on any sort of digital versus physical media still dominates the magazine business, the movie business, the music business. Just barely in the music business, but they had a bit of a revolution about a decade ago. But in the case of magazines, it's only 5 or 6% of the magazine business that's digital. Now, you would think with iPads and everything else, and just the history of publishing, that would be a much greater number, but it's not. So as we become more mobile, I want to touch on something again because I think it's important, is the metering piece of this. Because we have, in this country anyway, this challenge of not really understanding how metering is going to work and how it's going to play itself out. And I think as we become more mobile, in other words, next year, I think internet subscriptions for mobile will outpace landline internet subscriptions by about 2 to 1. So more and more people are going to consume more and more of their internet via mobile versus via landline. Everybody's used to being metered on their mobile internet. No one's really used to being metered on their landline internet unless you live in Canada or other parts of the world. But that's the direction that business is going. Get a little hook or something if I go over my 5 minutes? No, I'll be done long before that. So I think that in this country in particular, that metering equation means that there's yet another disincentive for large-scale media distribution via the internet. And consumers are only going to take so much of that. So what does that mean for us in the business? That this is a long-term game. This is a marathon, not a sprint. So when you come to conferences like this, I think we're the classic, you know, we're the guys with the hammer. right? And everything looks like a nail to us, and cloud is our hammer, and we talk about cloud being the solution to everything. But cloud storage is not the cheapest. The bandwidth makes it really expensive. And for media companies in particular, they actually like their legacy business model, right? They love the fact that physical packaged goods has a very mature distribution channel. It's very cost effective. It's very high margin. And they have absolutely no incentive to drive their customers towards a lower margin system that is not as mature. And they know the adoption rates are lower and their revenue is going to be much lower. So efficiency is not inherent to any of these technologies. It's a function of the workflow and what we do with it in terms of as a business application. And cost is the big one. But also security and usability still remain significant barriers. I think of the bandwidth problem as a usability problem. And I think of the security problem as a twofold problem. One is my protection of my own personal data. But if I'm a content holder, my other concern is how do I protect against the proliferation of my data in places that I don't want it. However, the real economic advantage for me is not having to store multiple copies of the file. Right? Why should, if among all of us here, there's probably at least two or three artists that we've all listened to at one time or another. So why do we all need a copy of the Rolling Stones or Pink Floyd or whatever it is, right? Why isn't there just one copy and we all access it at the same time? Because technology does that, but that's not the way we do it. We all buy our own copies now. So the only real incentive here for anybody to do anything is big data. And that was, I thought the HP presentation was great. Because big data is where it all comes together, right? If I'm a big brand owner, a big media company, brand owners in particular, the biggest brand in the world is a big soft drink company that I'm sure you've all heard of that I won't mention. But one of the things they don't know is who their customers are. Until there were apps that would allow you to log on and tell them what your favorite beverage was, they were completely disintermediated from their entire customer base. They knew which stores it was sold in. They knew at a very high level, demographically, how many people like this beverage in this country and what the formula was, more sugar here, less sugar there. But they didn't know who the actual consumer was until very, very recently, until big data. That's what's transforming all this business. And the transformative aspect of cloud isn't storage related in my mind, and isn't business related, it's big data related. And media companies are finding out the exact same thing. And I think once they start to identify us at that level, it's not just a play for not having to have multiple copies of the file, it's also an advertising thing, as been mentioned before. So my presentation isn't about big data, but I think that that's where all of this converges, definitely. And that's it for me. How close was I? 1 minute? All right.